It's 19. It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello, welcome, welcome, one and all. It is June 9th, 2022, and it is 1900 UTC. Thank you so much for being here. Today is going to be a bit of a mix of show. I wanted to record a bit, or try and get as much recorded as I could, so before going to work, because that's usually the hang up. So what I've done is I've gone ahead and found all the sound files that are used during the show, you know, like
sounds like somebody's got a case of the mundus.
So I should be able to get that moved over to my work machine, or at least in a folder on my work machine. Shh, don't tell the office. And then so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and do the top stories, and then we'll play a song, and then I'll record the remaining stories in the office, hopefully. No matter what happens, thanks for being here and hanging out, tuning in. If you want to hang out and talk during the show, SSH over to SDF, and then launch COM, that's C-O-M, that's the chat program used at SDF, and just SSH over, run the command COM, press enter, then press G for go to and type Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word, and that will take you to the Anon Radio room where you can hang out and talk with all the cool people. It's kind of a rotating group of people depending different folks there. So I recorded this as a sound before, and then mentioned people, and then it became confusing when they weren't really there, because even if I say it's a recording, it's not always, people don't hear that part. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started. So let's start the way we pretty much always start, and that, my friends, is with
world news.
That's right, the world news. There's a lot going on in the world. Thailand starts us off with some drug stuff going on. So, first, Thai cops seize meth hidden in replica Easter Island statue. The authorities have seized 200 kilograms of crystal meth hidden inside a replica Easter Island statue awaiting shipment to Taiwan, police said Thursday. Southeast Asia's so-called Golden Triangle, the notorious border region of Myanmar, formerly Burma, Laos, and Thailand, has long been an infamous hotspot for drug production and trafficking. Thai drugs officers working with Taiwanese police raided a shipping company in the port city of Lam Chabang and some 50 kilometers southeast of Bangkok to examine six statue heads made from cement and metal frames. Officers used an angle grinder, hammers, and chisels to cut a hole in one statue, uncovering the drugs hidden inside in plastic bags, according to footage shown in local media. Kamaran Hosiri, a commander of the Foreign Affairs Division of the Royal Thai Police, told AFP the drugs were due to be shipped to Taiwan. The statues were originally transported to the kingdom from Taiwan in late 2020 for an exhibition. Police have sought arrest warrants for Thai and Taiwanese drug suspects connected to the statues. United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime Regional Representative Jeremy Douglas said the haul was no surprise. Trafficking connections between syndicates arrive in Mekong, including Thailand and Taiwan, are long-standing and strong, Douglas told AFP. The seizure comes after a UN report published last month said a record 1 billion methamphetamine pills were seized in East and Southeast Asia last year. They also said 79 tons of crystal meth were seized across the region in the same period. Experts say methamphetamine production is at an unprecedented level and has been exacerbated by the coup in Myanmar in February last year, which paralyzed the economy. Myanmar's lawlessness is proving ideal conditions for illicit drug labs to flourish, with largely unchecked supply of precursor chemicals flooding in from China. So, the free market at work. Of course, and we normally wouldn't start with a drug story, but I thought it was a surprise because I was really more excited about this story. Thailand legalizes cannabis trade, but still bans recreational use. People in Thailand can now grow cannabis plants at home and sell the crop after the nation removed marijuana from its banned narcotics list. It's the first nation to advance such a move in Southeast Asia, a region known for its stringent drug laws. But recreational use is still banned, even though advocates say the easing effectively decriminalizes marijuana. The government is hoping that developing a local cannabis trade will boost agriculture and tourism. It's even giving away 1 million cannabis seedlings to citizens to encourage pickup. It's an opportunity for people and the state to earn income from marijuana and hemp, said Anutin Charnivakul, Deputy Prime Minister and Health Minister, on his social media account last month. He shared a photo on Facebook of a chicken dish cooked with cannabis, adding that anyone could sell the dish if they followed the rules, the main one being that products must contain less than 0.2% of THC, the compound that gives users the high feeling. From Thursday, households will be able to cultivate up to 6 cannabis plants at home if they register with authorities, and companies can also farm the plant with a permit. Diners will also be able to order cannabis-infused dishes and drinks at restaurants. Clinics across the country can also more freely offer cannabis as treatment. Thailand was first in Asia to legalize medicinal cannabis in 2018. However, using the drug for personal use is still illegal. Officials have warned people against smoking in public, saying that it's considered a public nuisance and offenders risk arrest. Kind of goes in on what exactly, so is it or isn't it legal? And it's essentially, you can't smoke it outside. But they're not going to arrest people just for possession of marijuana. So, it's one of those kind of gray areas. The official goal is for Thailand to get a head start on its neighbors in winning a larger slice of the lucrative health market for health treatments, and their derivatives like CBD. But there's another motive, and that's to reduce overcrowding in some of the world's most overcrowded jails. Because, yeah, I don't know if I skipped that part, but they are releasing, let's see. Under the plan, the government says it also aims to release about 4,000 prisoners convicted of cannabis-related offenses. So those people who are in jail for doing something that used to be illegal will be released. So that's pretty cool. All right. Well, what else is going on? The world's a big place. There's a lot more than marijuana, you know. In the Congo, this is something I was surprised by. Well, it surprised me, but in reality, it probably shouldn't. The Russian continent, several countries there, are in support of Russia because Russia has done a lot for them. So let's jump into it. Let's look at the story. The Congolese student fighting with pro-Russian separatists in Ukraine. Fighting alongside pro-Russian separatists as part of Moscow's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine wasn't mentioned in the brochures of Luhansk University when Jean-Claude Sangwa, a 27-year-old student from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, moved to the breakaway region last year to study economics. But when the head of the Kremlin-controlled, self-declared Luhansk People's Republic announced a full military mobilization of the region on February 19th, Sangwa, together with two friends and fellow students from DRC and Central Africa Republic, decided to join the local militia and take up arms against Ukraine. "I joined because the war came to our republic. What should I have done? I am a man and have to fight," Sangwa said in broken Russian. "The whole world is fighting against Russia," he added, when asked why he had decided to join the militia. Sangwa moved to Russia 2 years ago to study in Rostov, a city close to the Ukrainian border, and then moved to Luhansk, which had been captured by separatists backed by the Russian army in 2014. There's a long tradition of Africans studying in Russia, beginning from when the Soviet Union started offering scholarships to African students in newly independent socialist and communist states in the post-colonial period. Between 1950 and 1990, about 400,000 Africans studied in the Soviet Union, while the numbers decreased significantly after the fall of communism. Vladimir Putin recently said more than 17,000 Africans were currently enrolled in Russian universities. Shortly after joining the militia, Sangwa was sent into combat and spent 2 months fighting. During that time, many of his African friends assumed that he was dead and posted goodbye messages on his social media accounts. 3 days after the war started, on February 27th, Sangwa's photo was posted online by Find Your Own, a Telegram channel created by the Ukrainian Internal Affairs Ministry to identify captured and killed soldiers. The post said Sangwa had been killed by Ukrainian forces alongside another African soldier. "The Ukrainian enemy found my military ID card and said I was dead. I'm alive, as you can see," said Sangwa. He is currently back to patrolling the streets in Luhansk as a member of the militia. There is no evidence that apart from Sangwa and his two friends, more African soldiers have been sent to Ukraine. But while his story is unusual, the pro-Moscow sentiments and opinions about who is responsible for the war are mainstream in large parts of Africa. "Certainly the West likes to think that sanctions have isolated Russia globally," said Paul Stronsky, a senior fellow and specialist on Russia at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, "and they did when it comes to the transatlantic community and wealthy Asian nations, but in the eyes of the rest of the world, in particular the African continent, Russia isn't that isolated." For many years, Stronsky said, Moscow has been cultivating ties with African leaders, and in 2019, Putin hosted the first Russian-African summit, attended by leaders of 43 nations. "Many of the African continent now believe the conflict is driven by NATO expansion, by reckless Western policies." I found this to be fascinating because it's one of those stories where it's like, oh, you know what? That's right. There is another perspective. And it just so happens that I'm in the indoctrinated West part of, and so it was like, oh, I wasn't being as objective as I could be. Or at least I was surprised because I thought, oh, the whole world's on this. And it's like, no, all the countries that are in the news on TV are into it, though. In Africa, the West has also been accused of double standards, caring more about Ukraine and its refugees than it does about other tragedies unfolding in Africa and across the world. Some of Putin's most enthusiastic supporters since the start of the war have been pan-Africanists, advocates of the doctrine of African unity and anti-imperialism. "Putin just wants to get his country back," Kimi Saba, a prominent Franco-Beninese pan-Africanist. French-speaking Benin, I think, French-Benin, pan-African, someone who's advocating for the doctrine of unity and anti-imperialism. Okay, sorry, there's just a lot in that to unpack. And I'm like, all right, be sure we all are on the same page. "He doesn't have the blood of slavery and colonization on his hands. He's not my messiah, but I prefer him to all Western presidents." Similarly, a leader of the Nigerian community in Moscow told The Guardian that most Nigerians were sympathetic to Russia. "The issue is complicated, but the West pushed Russia to do this," he said. Beyond issues of morality, Russia has gained a foothold in Africa through developing defensive alliances, supplying weapons to authoritarian leaders with no strings attached, and presenting itself as an ally against armed insurgents. Several African leaders, most notably in South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa, have openly said they believe Western efforts to expand NATO contributed to the war. Even though African nations are likely to be disproportionately affected by the impending global food crisis, owing to their strong dependence on Russia and Ukrainian wheat, some African leaders have shifted the blame for food shortages and price rises onto the West, parroting Russia's narratives. So, anyway, I'm still not on Russia's side as far as the Ukraine stuff goes, but I did find this to be very interesting, and it kind of gives me an idea that there's a much larger contingent that supports Russia than I'd originally ever thought, and so I really need to keep a more open mind. And that was the big news out of that story, the huge news really for me. All right, well, we're about 15 minutes in, which means it's time for a song. This guy on my back.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
I do want to tell you one cool technology story before we go. James Webb Space Telescope has been hit by a tiny meteorite. A tiny rock fragment has hit the new James Webb Space Telescope's main mirror. The damage inflicted by the dust-sized micrometeoroid is producing a noticeable effect in the observatory's data, but is not expected to limit the mission's overall performance. Which is really a bummer. James Webb was launched in December to succeed the revolutionary, but now aging Hubble telescope. But I don't think it's succeed. Anyway, it's going to replace the Hubble Space Telescope. Astronomers are due to release its first views of the cosmos on July 12th. The U.S. space agency NASA said the images would be no less stunning because of what just happened. So, it's expected to live 10 years, or it's got enough stuff on it so that it'll last 10 years in space. It happened sometime between May 23rd and May 25th. Analysis indicates the mirror segment known as C3, one of the 18 beryllium gold tiles that make up the primary reflector, was struck. The speed at which things move through space means even the smallest particles can impart a lot of energy when colliding with another object. Webb has now been hit 5 times, with this latest event being the most significant. Webb has an open design. Its mirrors are not guarded by the kind of tubular baffle seen on other space telescopes. Instead, the reflectors sit behind one giant sun shield that allows them to maintain the stable cold temperatures needed to detect infrared light. I thought it's kind of neat. Let me see if I can get this. Let me do this real quick. The C3 section's like the bottom right. And essentially what happened is it's got a big old shield towards the sun, and the satellite is pointing back out, or the telescope's pointing away from the Earth. And so that's where it's most vulnerable, I guess. Anyway, if you visit TX0, TIX0, so TangoXray0.org/10Z, 10Z. So if you go to TX0.org/10Z, that will take you to the BBC's photo of the primary reflector and show you where the C3 segment is. And it was struck by a piece of dust, so a dust-sized particle. So a small segment, but it was enough to be noticed. So anyway, that's just what's going on there. All right, let's go ahead and get a song playing, and then, and then we'll come back and finish up. We'll go through the remaining headlines. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for listening on radio, and please stick around at 1932.